With the November general election just days away and early voting underway here in Wisconsin, the presidential candidates and their surrogates are barnstorming battleground states like ours.
The Democratic National Committee Chairman Jamie Harrison told WISN-TV recently that all the eyes of the nation are on Wisconsin.
And media outlets from around the country and the world are taking stock and filing stories from all corners of the state.
That includes Jonathan Martin, a politics bureau chief and senior political columnist at Politico. He is visiting Wisconsin this week as the journalist in residence at the UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics. And he's here with us to talk about what he's seeing, both on the ground and from a bird's eye view. Jonathan, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
It's great to be here and a thrill to be in Badgerland. Thanks for having me.
And you are in the throes of a battleground state here
Indeed.
In Wisconsin this week. The big theme of your visit is about media ethics and how to cover the election ethically, especially given the increasing polarization that we're seeing. What does it mean to cover this election ethically?
Well, it's never been harder, at least in modern times, to cover politics because fewer and fewer people can agree on facts. We all grew up in an era of post-World War II consensus politics, media, and culture. And to put it in football terms, use a seasonal topic or seasonal metaphor rather, everything was kind of between the 40-yard lines. And that is different now. We're in a more fractured, fragmented culture, and everything, it's more like the 19th century than it is the second half of the 20th century. That's a long way of saying if we can't agree on the basic facts, it's hard to have arguments because we can't even get to different opinions. We can't even agree on facts. The internet has made it harder. Social media has made it harder yet. But we have no choice. We have to inform the electorate, and we have to give voters the basics about who the candidates are and what they stand for, even if that is more challenging now than ever.
Our producers were out on campus this week talking with students about their perspectives on voting. And Joseph from Lake Geneva says that as a younger voter, he sees a lack of understanding from politicians about technology and how his generation is interacting with social media. Let's have a listen.
I think there's a lot of problems, especially with disinformation and misinformation, that it seems like a lot of politicians are aware of but don't seem fully equipped to address and or don't have proper guidance for addressing.
How should politicians handle the spread of misinformation and the deliberate spread of false information?
Well, let's cut to the chase here. One of our two nominees for president is a purveyor of disinformation. Donald Trump pushes information that's not true. I can cite you chapter and verse. The most obvious example being that Haitian migrant in Springfield, Ohio. Your listeners know that story. I don't have to belabor it. So it's tough when you've got one of the two nominees as sort of a purveyor of disinformation. How do we cover an era of politics and government when people do not believe the basics, when people are susceptible to believe, for example, the government bioengineered a hurricane? Well, it's pretty darn tough, and it's getting harder yet. I've been speaking to students this week here at UW in classes, in lecture halls, and in conversations on the side, and this comes up over and over again, which is, when people all have kind of their own version of reality, how do we go into journalism? How do we cover campaigns? How do we cover government? And it's not easy. What worries me is the pace of the technology is outdoing the speed of the solution. So I say that. Let's say that the government, state or federal, decides to regulate social media. We decide that the algorithms are just pushing people into their versions of reality, and we have to crack down on social media and the algorithms. Well, that's going to take years, right? And what I worry about is by the time that that happens, there's going to be some new technological wave that we're going to have to address, and we'll be fighting the last war instead of the current one.
Well, let's turn to the Trump campaign. Journalists have struggled to cover Trump since he first announced that he was running for president in 2015. That's over 9 years ago.
Right.
There is a tension between taking him literally versus taking him seriously.
Yes.
So what do you think the media has learned about covering Trump over the past decade?
We haven't fixed it. We haven't figured it out. I mean, you're right. It's been over 9 years. Trump has effectively broken the system because the system that we had in place, the sort of AP-style candidate X said X, candidate Y said Y today. Straightforward, again, between the 40-yard lines. It just doesn't work for him because you have to basically grade him on a curve to do that kind of journalism. So you're left in a situation where if you cover him for what he is and you're honest about the aberrant nature of his candidacy and his conduct, then you write in a way that's breathless, that's Pearl Harbor-style headlines and coverage, and you exhaust the reader and you desensitize the reader or the viewer. And you also, you prompt claims of bias. You just hate Trump. You don't like Trump. Okay, if you don't cover him for what he is, if you grade him on a curve, if you try to pretend like this is Bob Dole, Bill Clinton, 1996, then you're doing your readers a disservice because you're not being truthful, which is the coin of our realm, about the nature of his candidacy and his political movement. So there's no easy answer because either approach creates huge challenges.
It's kind of rock between a rock and a hard spot. So, indeed, you know, as the election approaches, there's a growing number of Americans concerned about the possibility of election fraud.
Yes.
And NPR's public editor says NPR aims to be a common denominator of calm through measured reporting. And it's just not the role of public media journalism to get people riled up.
Yes.
Is this a sound journalistic approach in these times?
I think it is. I think having sober reporting on just the facts, on being straightforward and unadorned, but also not grading on a curve and saying straightforward that if there's no evidence of voter fraud in this community, then just say it outright. I think that's a good thing. And I think people depend on outlets like NPR to do as much. So, I would applaud that decision. You don't have to try to pretend something that's normal that's not. You don't have to say, well, candidate X said the moon's made of cheese today. And no, that's not true. It's not made of cheese. If there's not evidence of voting fraud, just say
it's cheese.
Well,
and you're in Wisconsin.
Uh-oh. I'm exactly. Sacred cows here, as it were.
Let's talk about ad spending. Election day ad spending. Wisconsinites, you know, you are being inundated with campaign ads as you walk the turf here.
Yes.
You know, it's the mailers and the commercials, the text messages, the social media. Ad spending set to break records.
Yes.
Total spending projected at $10.2 billion. That's from Ad Impact, the ad tracking platform.
Yeah.
Do these dollars translate into higher turnout?
Yes, they wouldn't spend the money if it didn't have some ROI, return on investment. The reason they do it is because it works. It's the oldest one in the book. Why do these politicians sling mud? Why do they do these negative ads? They do it because it works. If there was a backlash to it, if it hurt them, they wouldn't do it. The name of the game is getting votes. They're going to do whatever it takes to get votes. And so, I think the fear is disarmament and maybe TV doesn't matter as much. We're going to cut our buy in half. Well, what if the other guy doesn't? Are you giving that person an advantage? So that's always the fear, is one-sided disarmament, because then you're handing their side the advantage. So the arms race goes on and it gets more expensive every election and they're going to find more and more mediums to reach voters.
We're discussing media coverage of the election with Jonathan Martin. He's politics bureau chief at Politico, where he reports from all around the country, writes about the big picture trends shaping politics. And he's here in Wisconsin this week as the journalist in residence at the UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics. Now, you've been on the ground here in Wisconsin.
Yes.
You're getting a feel for this battleground
state
as the campaigns just, barnstorm, if there's an even bigger word for barnstorm. The Democratic National Committee chairman has said in recent days, all eyes of the nation are on our state ahead of Election Day. What are you observing about Wisconsin compared to the other six swing states?
So here's my anecdotal report. I've spoken to about five classes so far. I've asked the kids to raise their hand if they're voting in Wisconsin. What's striking to me is when I ask that question in the classes, almost all the hands shoot up. These kids, whether they're native Wisconsinites or they're in school here from somewhere else, they're registering to vote here because they know the power of their vote. And the other thing that's striking is I don't find, at least folks admitting it, that there's any flirtation with Jill Stein. You know, she got, I think, nearly a couple thousand votes here in 2016, very left-wing community. And you don't see that this time, which is telling, and I think significant.
In your recent column for Politico, you talk about bipartisanship as the winning move for the Harris campaign and that she should do more to signal to voters that she would govern from the political center. What would this look like? What would this strategy look like?
I think that, and I saw her and Liz Cheney on Monday night together in suburban Milwaukee, sort of Waukesha County, classic Republican suburb.
Wow County.
Exactly. But there's voters up for grabs there now because they don't like Trump's style of Republicanism. So she's trying to pick up those George W. Bush Republicans. And I just think that she's got to do more because criticizing Trump as a bad man who did the wrong thing on January 6th and is unfit for office and of ill character. If you are voting based on those things, if you already believe those things, you're almost certainly already voting for Kamala Harris. The voters she needs that are still up for grabs are those that maybe they think Trump's a bad man, but they want more from Harris about her and how she would govern. And frankly, they want reassurance that she'd be a moderate. And I think there's ways she can do that. She can talk about the bills that she would work on with Republicans, talk about her agenda, ways to compromise. Yes, use the C word. Say compromise. Americans, I think a lot of them are dying for the two parties to work together. And I think it's in her interest to say, America, the dirty little secret is that a lot of Republicans are tired of Trump, too. So are you, and so am I. Let's work together to get stuff done. I think that kind of signaling and mention a couple of names of lawmakers that you'd work with or even appoint, I think that can go a long way to cueing those kind of remaining voters in the center who don't want to vote for Trump, but maybe they're not sure they can pull the Democratic lever yet because right now, they may write somebody in or they may skip the top line. Don't forget, in Wisconsin in 2020, I think like 70,000 voters did not vote in the top line but voted in the rest of the ticket. That's a lot of people who couldn't bring themselves to vote Trump or Biden last time.
Trump won large majorities among rural voters in 2016, further consolidated the rural vote in 2020, and Hillary Clinton famously did not visit Wisconsin during the 2016 campaign.
Infamy!
And now it feels like a reversal leading up to 2024. So, you know, as journalists, it feels like we parachute into rural areas to describe what's happening with voters. How do you view the rural vote in this cycle?
I think it's going to be difficult for Kamala Harris to do much better than Biden did, and she may do a little bit worse. Look, there are broader structural trends shaping American politics that Trump has accelerated, but that I think are bigger than Trump. And there is what's called education realignment. A lot of your listeners will understand this. The shorter way of saying it is that suburbanites, traditional center-center-right voters are more open to voting for Democrats now on cultural grounds. They simply don't recognize what the Republican Party is. Old school Democrats, folks whose parents were, you know, FDR or Kennedy Democrats, are more open now to voting for Republicans on cultural grounds. People don't vote their pocketbook necessarily. Culture matters on both sides. And I think that is what is shaping politics in a way that the map of Wisconsin going forward would be very unfamiliar to people who grew up in Wisconsin, where you saw these traditional Democratic labor communities that are now red. And you saw a lot of the kind of upscale, communities that were always Republican that are much more split now. And I think that's only going to accelerate.
Jonathan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm Wisconsin.
That was Jonathan Martin, politics bureau chief and senior political columnist at Politico, talking about media coverage of the election and political trends he's seeing while visiting Wisconsin as the journalist in residence.